Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of brainhackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of brainhackers.com and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey, Brain Hackers, Dave Farrow here with another Brains Behind It. I'm talking to Yali Sar. He's the founder and CEO of Taylor Brands. These guys are geniuses when it comes to design and logos. So if you're in a position where that's important to you, then listen up. This is going to be a good interview. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So tell us in your own words, anything that I might have missed, what makes Taylor Brands different?
So we actually created 3 years ago, we had this insane idea of teaching a computer how to design, okay? So we started out with simple, to us at least, algorithm. And as we started rolling out, we realized that the first application of this algorithm is people are searching for a logo. They can't really afford a top-notch designer. How do we kind of balance this thing of price versus quality? Mm-hmm. And then we started teaching Taylor how to create logos. From there, business cards, letterheads, brand books, social covers. Today, Taylor basically creates an automated branding agency. So everything from creating your logo to automating your social posts, completely generated by artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Now, how have you found the quality of that, though, in generating this? Have you you've obviously been tweaking this over time. Did you have any major crises in the beginning where you had a problem where, I mean, I'm just thinking of the robot that went on Twitter and became racist, you know, like the AI does something you didn't want to do. Look that up if you don't know, guys. It was hilarious. Apparently it took like 2 days for an AI Twitter bot to become like just this racist person. It was crazy.
It's funny, you ask whether or not there were mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
And in order to answer that, we really have to try and understand what is creativity, right? I'm saying that we're automating creativity, but at the end of the day,
what is right and wrong when it comes to creativity, right?
Creativity is a mistake. So if you look at design, if you look at copy lines, in my backgrounds, I was a political spokesperson. I worked for BBDO. And you could basically patternize everything creative, right? Design, copy lines, it's basically a formula. But
so you're talking about like templates and formulas for like design, things lining up, things like that.
Think of it's more than templates, because eventually every logo design is just a formula of a structure, a typeface, and a style, right? Every copy line is basically a linear formula that is created from the product offering, the unique selling point, and the method of exhibition, right? If you mm-hmm. have all of these, if the product is a podcast, right? And the quality is best, fastest, most popular, right? And then the method of exhibition, let's say, is show the numbers. Over 500,000 people watched the most popular podcast around, and then a CTA. Click here to find out more. That's how you create a copy line. That's a formula. Mm-hmm. But then you ask yourself, what is creativity? Do you play an instrument by any chance?
I do. I play harmonica.
Okay, amazing. So if I give you a classical piece to play, okay, the intervals between the notes are just perfect. It's a perfect formula. And then someone that is feeling over creative that day decides to change the distance between two notes. Okay. He's doing a mistake.
Holding it out a little too long or a little shorter or playing with it around. Yeah.
Now he's making a mistake, but if enough people enjoy his mistake, he just started playing jazz. Mm. And this is what creativity is all about. So let's say that we give you 6 logos to choose from. Those are created from perfect formulas. And then we let you change it. Okay, every change you're about to make is a mistake, but when 100,000 people, today on Taylor, every second and a half somebody designs something, when 100,000 people create a similar mistake, there's a pattern, and that pattern syncs and creates a line of creativity. So Have we made mistakes and awkward mistakes? Yeah, we make those every day. We have almost, you know, we have a few million new users on the site every month. So hopefully we're making tons of mistakes so we can get more and more creative.
That's fantastic. That's probably the one of the most creative answers to that question that I've heard so far. but also I usually ask, you know, if you've had a crisis, has there been a time where you were afraid that things wouldn't survive, that there'd be a major crisis you wouldn't be able to bounce back from?
Yeah, of course. We have this saying, try, fail, repeat in the company. Mm-hmm. And we try to apply it for everything. So for me personally, you know, we raised two rounds by now, and two rounds of funding, and we probably made 24 different iterations of the product. Mm-hmm. There have been numerous times where I thought, you know, we can't do it. Okay, so just I'll give you like a specific example. I think when we took our first round of funding, one of the things that we said that we're going to do is reach a certain number of revenue. That was back in the day where we had zero revenues, okay? Mm-hmm. And part of the promise was like, yeah, of course, we're going to reach in 12 months this imaginary number. And I remember that the moment we signed the document, I was like, how are we going?
I just made the biggest promise. How do I deliver? Yeah.
And we tried and we failed and we repeated for 12 months. And on the 12 months, we reached 98.5% of the number, okay? And it was insane. And I went to the investors and I was like, listen, guys, I failed. I didn't make it to 100%. And they looked at me shocked and I was like, we didn't expect you to make 70% of it. So, you know,
now that's amazing. The world of investing, right? We was a hope and a prayer and you don't realize how many fail.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, and I like the attitude of failing upwards. I really like that because it really speaks to that, you know, that the kind of the genius behind perseverance. I actually read something recently about Einstein. A lot of people in the scientific community, there's kind of a consensus that it's not so much that he was particularly brilliant, even though we kind of equate him with high IQ. He didn't have the highest of IQ. He was in the 160 range instead of 180 or 90 that we think of as a super high IQ. Similar range to myself, by the way. But the thing is, it was his persistence. He never gave up. He kept on working on the formula, working on something, coming up with new ideas and failing a whole bunch. A lot of people don't realize how many times he failed. That's why he was working in a patent office and not a professor somewhere, guys. So genius comes from perspiration as well. So I like that idea of failing upwards. So I am really curious about your process. We're going through a rebranding here. I'm not asking for free work, but I do get people asking me to do branding for them, but for a different reason. So my background, as we talked about before, I'm in the Guinness Book of Records for memory, and I've basically made advertisements that are very memorable. It uses actually mnemonic techniques. Usually, I usually point to something like the Geico Gecko, the Aflac Duck, things like that. That are, you know, even before that would be, you know, the Camel. The Camel cigarettes, and also things like McDonald's, you know, the clown. A lot of these things are, these logos become mascots. But what it really does, though, from my perspective, what I'm most interested in is something that helps stick in people's minds. Geico has crushed their competition because people remember it first. Most people don't even think that it's better. They just think it's first, right? The copper top of Duracell has always outsold Energizer because they had that copper top as their logo slash brand slash, you know, icon. And what happened was the people realized that the color copper refers to something that's antique. So the feeling is that it'll last longer. And no matter how many times that bunny runs across the screen, in survey after survey, people still think Duracell lasts longer than Energizer, even though they're probably made in the same Chinese factory. There's certain things about branding that have to do with the human condition And I'm wondering if you touch on that at all. Like a great example is what's behind me. This is like the Pharaoh symbol. Obviously, I'm not Egyptian. We're not in Egypt. We're not based in Egypt. But my last name is Pharaoh, and I did this on the college market first. It really took off because it was a way in 2 seconds I could show somebody something, and they never forgot my name. You know, and it's just like the Geico Gecko. You show somebody in a second and they never forget it. We're actually changing this, by the way. You'll be happy to know. It's a little cheesy for the corporate market, but it's kind of bittersweet because it really has, it more than tripled my sales when I started using it. So that you can't argue with success. What we're going to go with is the Pharaoh lettering, but it's going to be more of, there's going to be an arrow going through the letters. And we're working on a bunch of different versions of that because it's spelt like arrow. So it's still a mnemonic. I just think it's a bit, a bit more culturally open mnemonic, and it just is more dynamic and everything. But I was wondering what you thought about something like that when people put thought into the brand, like the FedEx logo with the arrow inside and all these different things. Do you think that's all, you know, BS, or do you think that that's for the big high-end things and you're trying to go for the introductory market where they just want to get a logo and get a website up earlier, or what?
You know, there is one of the most admirable brand designers I've ever studied is Paul Rand, right? Mm. Paul Rand created IBM. Yep. He created one of the first concepts for UPS, ABC, so forth. And there's a great interview with him when he was, I think, 80-something. And they asked him, listen, why are there 8 lines in the IBM logo, right? Is it the 8-bit?
8-bit code.
He heard something about 8-bit code. And he was like, he looked all shocked at the interviewer. And was like, I tried 7 lines, didn't look too good. I tried 9 lines, didn't look too good. 8 lines was just the perfect weight.
Yeah.
And when you think about it as from a design perspective, right? Because that's that's how I assess things. We all like to think of ourselves as unique little snowflakes. We like to think about, oh, and by the way, sorry, the punchline, I forgot about it. They asked him, and this is what you told IBM. And he was like, of course not. I wrote 150 pages worth of brand book about why they have 8 lines. We all like to think of ourselves as unique little snowflakes. And as designers, we often let people have that feeling by, you know, writing those things to sell the brand. But the truth is, we try and create simplicity. You talked about memorable things.
Yeah.
I can tell you one of the most memorable things is a simple typography logo, right? Helvetica is a great typeface because it's so memorable. And when you see American Apparel, right, you just remember the name, okay? And you don't really mind the fact that if you think about it, there's nothing unique about it, right? Crate and Barrel, Panasonic, Knoll, all have the same logo. It's just Helvetica, right?
But I would argue though that Apple destroyed Panasonic and Sony and all of them with more iconography, you know. So I do respect the typeface and the lettering. I guess I'm wondering more when people talk about a logo. You sound like you're talking more like a letter mark versus like a logo as in like a design. Do you think there's still a place for the artist in this world to create an image and use imagery?
I think there's always place to create imagery. I think that you always have to think about what is simple enough for the human mind to receive. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about memorizing things from a memory perspective, right? I'm just thinking about literally what is very easy for your eye to perceive and immediately process, right? So yeah, Apple today, we like to think about it as a great logo, but we actually think about it as a great logo because Apple succeeded as a company. If I'm going back to Paul Rand, they asked him, okay, so how did you know that the IBM logo is going to be so memorable? And he said, and how did you know that this is going to be reflective of computers? And he said, do you know what was the second option they never chose? It was a font called Old English. Old English is a Gothic font. And if I would choose Old English today, you would associate every computer with Gothic. Mm. And we often like to tie those things together, but they really don't.
That's a good point. I mean, I hadn't thought about American Apparel. It's very memorable too. I guess in this realm, it's not so much empirical. It still is very, very subjective. But that does make sense because, Apple just was a tremendous success. Microsoft did really well and their logo wasn't super memorable. They only really went with the Windows later on.
I would argue that for them, a logo is supposed to fit. Okay. Mm. It's supposed to complement what you're doing. Okay. Mm. So for example, let me just for a second here, if you would ask a fashion logo from a designer, okay, he would most likely give you immediately a font called Vito. Why? Because the old Helpers Bazaar, Giorgio Armani, they all use very simple typography. They all use the same font, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. And immediately, when you would see a new logo made with that font, you would think of one thing: fashion. Mm. Now, this is what I want to associate in your mind.
Mm-hmm. So I'm more thinking also things like, I mean, what comes to mind also is like the Nike symbol. Everyone makes a big deal out of the swoosh. But I guess your argument is, well, you know, Nike just managed themselves really well and became a great fashion brand. So of course we associated the swoosh, but if they weren't so good at business, then we would associate it, you know, to the Adidas symbol or something else.
Our role as designers is to create something that people associate with your brand before your brand becomes something independent, right? If you will look today, the most memorable brand, by the way, is MasterCard. If you look at the two circles, they went to a point where they could take one red circle and one orange circle, and you could identify immediately that's MasterCard. It's just two circles, right? Mm-hmm. The point is that before they became MasterCard, the role of the designer was to make sure that somebody that never knew what MasterCard is would look at their icon, would look at the design, and know this is a finance company, okay? Mm. This is a company that you can trust. And this is the role of creating great logo design to begin with.
That's fantastic. I love this perspective because I did come from a different perspective, but I realized that a lot of my view is more from small business. You know, we did a lot of logo design. Well, a lot of like copywriting and brand mnemonic type branding stuff for people in real estate, for example, you know, because their name keeps on being forgotten, you know? So it was more like a memory trick added to the marketing rather than, a design background. But as we did more and more, we got into looking at the design and it seems like in today's day and age, there's this fire hose of information coming at everybody. And the one person who can just be remembered tends to be top of mind. You've given me some food for thought, you know, so going for simplistic design is very memorable too. And the examples you said, they kind of challenge some of my preconceived notions. So I like that. So I want to ask you, looking back, is there anything that you regret? Would you do anything differently?
There's a philosophical hurdle with this question, right? Mm-hmm. You're the sum of every mistake that you made. So every success that you're currently experiencing is the result of all the mistakes you made along the way. If you're satisfied with the place you're in right now, then you can't really regret anything done along the way. So my bad answer for this is no. And I apologize for that.
No, actually it's I get a similar answer from a lot of people that there are things that they would regret, but if they changed them, then they would also have missed out on the lessons that they learned from it, which ended up making them much more money. So that tends to be the stock answer. I'm almost to the point where I want to retire that question because I almost get such a similar answer so often, but I like it, you know, asking about regrets. A fun question. What do you do for your morning routine? What do you have for breakfast if you have breakfast?
I actually don't have breakfast. I wake up pretty early, go swimming.
Nice.
Finish swimming. Read every news outlet I can find, go to the office, make sure that I have those 3-4 hours of work before anybody else comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And then meetings start flowing in. And then, you know, That's basically the day until it finishes. So
cool. Awesome. Okay. So I want to ask you, and I want to get back into the design thing, because I do have kind of a case study that I talk about a lot that you might have a different view on, which would be fascinating. But first off though, do you think as an entrepreneur, as well as an entrepreneur that deals with deep mind stuff, you know, building AI and everything, do you think that your brain is different? Do you think that you think about problems differently than the average person or even the average entrepreneur? And
no.
If so, how? Like what sort of trait? No, you think different, the same as everyone else.
I think that I don't think of myself as very unique. Okay. It's the one thing that I do is I deconstruct everything. And maybe it's different. I don't know. But it's not something that I think makes me better. It's just, it makes me who I am. So whenever there's anything on the table, whenever somebody suggests doing something, you immediately need to deconstruct it, to think, okay, if this is the solution he's proposing, then what is the problem? If this is the problem, what is causing the problem? And it's basically the same thing we do with creativity. Everything has a formula to begin with. If you can find and understand that formula, you can understand the solution a lot better and see if it's the right solution to even choose and try to engage.
That's spoken like a person who's building AI. You know, you find the algorithm and you follow it. Yeah, no, I'm a big believer in algorithms myself. We put systems in place and that's what makes for a successful company. I like that. Okay, so I want to ask you something, because I think that I'm actually starting to make a distinction. I used to think it was more about logo, but I think it's more about more of different marketing tricks that go beyond logo. So I usually use this as a great example. Aflac. Aflac used this duck in its commercials for many years. The Aflac duck was very annoying. It was voiced by a very annoying voice. It was Aflac. You know the one I'm talking about?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So their sales went through the roof though when they started using it, and it was something that was much more memorable than just kind of the boring, just traditional, like, you know, State Farm doesn't really look like it is a thing, you know, or different, you know, insurance companies. So when they did it, their sales went through the roof for many years. And then the CEO thought that the duck made them look silly. It kind of lowered their brand, credibility. So they got rid of the duck. And it's a perfect case study in something like this, because their sales tanked, their stock price tanked, and then the board got rid of the CEO. The next CEO comes in and says, well, I guess we're the duck company now, brought the duck back, made a big deal out of it. And again, it's when the customer is ready to buy and they have a bunch of choices, what sticks in their mind. That's why I mentioned, the Geico Gecko is the biggest stickability in the insurance market. And Aflac duck is close by there in that medical market. But what I'm trying to think about is, like, I was maybe thinking of this as logo, because they did use like the duck in their words, but it's not so much a logo, more of like a mascot, I guess. And it doesn't even need to be in their logo or branding. It's just something, it's a mnemonic technique to help the customers remember their name, essentially. And I was thinking about that, and as you were talking, I was thinking that, the McDonald's is a great example as well. People, the logo is the golden arches, but that's not particularly memorable. But of course they took over because they appealed to kids back when clowns appealed to kids and they weren't scary. Today clowns are scary, so it doesn't work. but maybe what we're talking about is two different things. I always thought of that in the same category as the Nike swoosh but it's really more like, it really is more like, I guess, a mascot or some sort of, it really is mnemonic technique. It really is a memory technique, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in the logo. You still need to have a logo that appeals to the eye. It appeals to your, like you were saying, like it gives you what you expect. You want a logo for a food company that makes you think of restaurants, not of finance or fashion. But I talk about that a little bit, when it comes to like the Aflac duck and everything and this sort of, it's a form of branding and sales, but it's not really the logo and design area.
Yeah, I think there's one of the misconceptions, and I agree with what you just said. One of the misconceptions we see with people coming and trying to engage with logo design is they want to be unique. Okay. And you know, if I, there's a famous ad trick, when you deploy online ads, okay, and you want to increase the CTA, okay, the people clicking your ad, okay, you know what's the easiest way to do it?
What's the easiest?
Put a woman's face on any online ad, okay, and you'll get an immediate lift in CTA. However, if then your brand has nothing to do with it, if the product you're selling has nothing to do with that face, then you're going to see a decline in the sales. So yes, it is important to, you know, what you're talking about is a marketing hook, and it is important to find that marketing hook, but you also have to make sure that there is a hook to your actual product.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, it becomes something that might generate more leads, but does it actually create more sales? I'm not really sure. We're going into an age, if 20 years ago, everything was unquantifiable, right? Branding was unquantifiable. Marketing was unquantifiable. I could sell an ad just by making it seem creative.
Now we can get data within a day or a few hours.
Yeah, we can get data on our ads. I can get data on branding because I have a person designing something every second and a half. And you don't really have to ask yourself, you know, you don't really have to speculate anymore. So does a duck work in order to generate more sales? It might, but you know, the misconception about it would be, okay, then, or the bad statistics about it would be, okay, if duck generates sales, then I should put a duck on everything, right?
Right.
But then if I put a duck on something else,
that formula doesn't fit because it was a unique thing that fit. It's like if clown generates sales, put a clown on everything. No, it was because McDonald's also was having these playgrounds. It was a place. It was a time when there was a lot of families. They were looking for a cheap place to bring their kids. So there was a whole bunch of things that kind of came together. You know, actually, I agree with you there. I remember having a conversation with the founder of Chuck E. Cheese, and he was saying that his brilliant idea was he went to Disney World, a time when families were everywhere. Everyone had a family. Now there's less people with kids, but this was like the majority of the population had large families. And Disney World was expensive and took a long time to get there. And he said, if I could make kind of a cheap, simple form of Disney World in every city in America, then I'll have something different. So what he was really trying to do, he could have used
a strategy basically.
Yeah. And he could have used a rat. He could have used a lot of different things, but whatever he used, I mean, I think he was trying to tie into cheese basically, for the pizza. But, you know, I think this goes into the larger concept. I really appreciate this conversation because when I got on there And I saw some of your work, I thought I might disagree with you on it, but really it's more like I was thinking too narrow. I was thinking about mnemonics or memory techniques, if you will, because I'm fascinated by it, being used in advertising just as a logo or a design, when really it's everything, you know, everything, every interaction helps the customer remember you.
Let's, you know, the story about sliced bread.
Oh, sliced bread. Yeah.
We like to say that we like to say the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? But there's one thing that is greater than sliced bread, and that's sliced bread branding. Because the truth is, we launched, I think the first sliced bread machine was invented in 1912. And it wasn't until 1927 when somebody actually managed to get somebody to purchase sliced bread because they had to package it. They had to brand it in a way that people were suddenly willing to pay extra for a loaf of bread that would expire faster, right? Because this is what sliced bread really is. And this is what branding is all about. It's about creating value to your product that extends beyond the actual value of what you're selling. And this is what allows, let's say, Starbucks to sell coffee for $5 when you can get it in a bodega for $2.
Yeah.
Or you can get it in a, you know, there's a coffee
at home
shop
for 50 cents or something. Yeah.
There's a coffee shop in Brooklyn that sells you it for $10, right?
Yeah.
Brooklyn Bean. And when we think about what branding really is, yes, it starts with a logo. And if you look at Starbucks logo, I think the first version, the 1970-something logo, is like this brown, sad version of their current logo. I wouldn't consider this quality coffee today. But then it extends to their physical branding and online branding and to the story they tell. They tell you that you buy coffee from, what is it? Single sourced beans, okay? Yeah. Single sourced beans and organic beans. And most of us don't really know what that means. Is it really good that it comes from a single source? I don't know, right? In my portfolio, they said diversify. So why is single source so good?
Yeah.
And it's
the same as steel cut oatmeal. It's like, what else would you cut it with?
Of course, but steel cut is good, right?
They're putting that on things now. Yeah.
And then you understand until the point where you understand that today we use the word Frappuccino for a lot of cold drinks, right? Mm. Frappuccino is a Starbucks trademark. You can't really use it on anything else, right? They invented that, right? You can go there and buy a unicorn Frappuccino. Heck, I don't know what that is, but I want to get it on my Instagram.
Yeah.
So there are memorable ploys. A unicorn Frappuccino is a memorable ploy. Mm-hmm. But when I go to the Starbucks coffee shop, what I want is the physical branding, the visual branding, to convey the fact that I'm drinking high quality coffee and that there's a reason that I'm paying $5 for something that I could buy for $2, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that their logo is now green versus brown, the fact that it has been, if you look at the evolution, it has been simplified, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that you no longer see Ford using Beaval and Ambus in their logo, they flattened it, right? That's simplicity. Mm-hmm. Simplicity today is considered high class.
Yeah, I agree. Also, you just have to look at, like, the branding extends beyond into everything. You just have to look at any other coffee shop, Dunkin' Donuts with the plastic chairs and everything. And then you have Starbucks with the wood, the wood paneling and all the, nice oak.
By the way, that's an amazing example, right? You just gave Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts logo, right? It's so much more kind of in your face, right? The colors are bright. You immediately spot it from a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
On the contrary, Starbucks is going through kind of a reform in the last 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. Where their branches try to look more and more local, right? Now, when you go to each one of those branches, for which of the coffees would you pay more? And the answer is probably, no offense to Dunkin' Donuts, but
yeah, of course. Starbucks.
Yeah. So memorable is not always what complements your brand, right? Mm. That's important to know.
Excellent. Well, I think that's fantastic, especially, and I can say as a memory expert and top memory experts in the world, I totally agree. Being memorable does not replace being quality, being well-branded and well-designed. And that's one of the reasons why we're converting to something less cheesy, but still.
Are you keeping the Faro?
This is going away. We're going to go with more of an arrow. But it worked so well on College Market. It worked so well with memory techniques and memory products because it's a mnemonic. It obviously does what it says it will do. People, I would go and I would mention the Faro on stage and people would never forget me. Like for years, they would never forget me. So they're like, oh, the memory techniques must work. So that kind of reinforced the brand.
But I think the Aero today with where you stand, right?
Yeah.
There's something a lot more complementary to your image, right? Yeah. Than
and simpler too. It simplifies, yeah. But it still keeps with the brand that I have methods to help you be more memorable. I have methods to help you remember. And as proof, you're not going to forget my name. So that it still does what it says it will do, but it's in a much more tasteful way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hey, when I'm all done that, I'll send you a copy and you can take a look you know, maybe I'll use your service to get a bunch of ideas for it as well, because we got to get on that. But hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and it's great to talk to somebody who's really on the cutting edge of this, looking into why we do things and where things are headed. And I love talking about what you know, AI is doing. So I appreciate you being on the brains behind it. You and Taylor is also definitely a brains behind that operation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.